Another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. I'm your host, Corey Kinnon, alongside Dalton Miller. Once again, we are out of college football games to talk about, folks. And because it was so successful last week, we're going to do it again. We're running back the mailbag. So running back the mailbag, we picked out three questions. We've got a ton. We're saving some for later. We'll get to a lot of these questions as we can, but we really want to go in depth with some of these questions and talk through them. And again, we shoot for 30-minute episodes. So we'll get around to him. We will get around to him. But Dalton, how's the great state of Pennsylvania treating you?
You know, it's really cold right now. And if anybody knows anything about me, I do not like the cold. There's a reason I live across the pond in Portugal, and it is for the weather. This is rough right now, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's tough to go outside, and I hate being stuck inside. So we're pushing through. We're pushing through.
I had to take both of my kids. My kids' daycare had a professional development day for all of their teachers on Tuesday. And so I was home with them all day, and my wife had scheduled both of them to get shots at the doctor on the same day. She's like, no, might as well knock it out both at once. And I was like, I mean, that's true. I might as well not take time off work. Let's just knock it out. It was 1 degrees outside. Mm-hmm. So figuring out the logistics of packing the double stroller, getting the double stroller out, getting them out. You're not allowed to put them in a car seat with a coat. So you have to get them out.
Can't have a coat in the car seat.
So you got to get them out of the car first, into the cold, then put the coat on them. Uh-huh. I put them in and then wrapped it, put them in the stroller and then just tucked the coats around them to walk inside. Mm-hmm. It's a 30-second walk inside. I'm just tucking them around, getting them both in there in the double stroller, getting them to stay in the stroller to get this done was a task. But then getting them back out to the truck, logistically, how do I do this? Which kid do I put in first? It was the whole thing.
Yeah,
it feels like -2 degrees out in Ohio today. So I feel you there. But let's dive into this mailbag, man.
Let's do it.
We got three pretty good questions here. So let's start with the first one. The Titans hired a GM. They hired the guy from Kansas City. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his name. And I didn't look up the pronunciation before this. So we're rolling with it. However, yes, they do have a director of football operations above him, Chad Brinker. And Brinker came out and said that the Titans will not pass on a generational talent with the first overall pick. Mm-hmm. Left it very vague. Who does he define as a generational talent?
I can tell you who it's not.
It's neither
of the quarterbacks.
See, that makes me that's fair, but he could also just be, you know, trying to grease the wheels of getting somebody to come up for that pick then. Maybe the Giants or something like that. But for the Cleveland Browns sitting at 2, this has some implications as well. If they don't go quarterback and they pass on Cam Ward, they pass on Shavar Sanders for Travis Hunter, for Abdul Carter, they deem one of those two players generational talent. They deem Mason Graham a generational talent. What kind of impact does that have on the Browns choosing at 2?
Yeah, and listen, fantastic question from Noah Schaefer at Brown Central on Twitter. I don't know, because at the end of the day, it really just comes down to how these teams feel about these quarterbacks.
Because the Browns can hit the quarterbacks too, so that means they take either Hunter or Carter. That could be the answer to the question.
And that's a very easy answer, especially when one's already gone. Because we've talked about this on last Dafter Draft episode. Who do you take between the two? And there's really no wrong answer to that question, because they're both. One is a legitimately generational player. Travis Hunter, we've never seen anything like him for what he's able to do on both sides of the ball, how intelligent he is in coverage, the ball skills that are generational on the offensive side of the ball, mm-hmm. and make him an alien on the defensive side of the ball with his ball skills. And then Abdul Carter, who is practically a carbon copy of Micah Parsons now, not Micah Parsons, the prospect, but the now Micah Parsons, mm-hmm. except he doesn't have 31-inch arms. He's actually proportional as an edge rusher. And so, man, you really can't choose poorly. And at the end of the day, this is always a difficult discussion, because if you don't take the quarterback and the quarterback ends up being a no Bull franchise guy for someone else, that's really tough to look back on and say, yeah, maybe hindsight, we should have done this. But you never know. Something that I like to always bring up when we talk about these young quarterbacks is the situation that they are stepping into and the installation that they have around them. And I do think that when you look at the Browns, they have a good situation for a young quarterback to come in. But at the end of the day, we've done the rankings. Neither guy is in our top 20. I don't know if either guy will be in the top 25. I got to be honest with you. The more I watch Shadur, the less sure I am about him. So I would pass on both of the quarterbacks if I were Cleveland. But I understand, especially with someone like Shadur, the way that that offense wants to operate. I can understand wanting that type of quarterback in the building.
I could too. I don't think they'll give a crap about what Deion thinks about what his
sense grew
either.
No.
That team shouldn't operate like that.
No.
I can't see them taking Cam Ward after seeing what a quarterback who refused to play in structure just did for that team.
And I can't understand the Titans doing it either, because look at Will Levis. Look at how much Brian Callahan hated Will Levis.
And Will Levis is all tools. All tools.
He's all tools, and he has that bonehead fumble and interception shot.
He's more athletic than Cam Ward. He's got a way bigger arm. His upper body mechanics are way – I mean, Cam Ward's got to go. I take that back. But, if they wanted to take Cam Ward, then why not just run it back with Will Levis? And you could probably say the same thing for Shadur, too. Although Shadur is a lot there less bozo-brained than Will Levis. And Brian Callahan, this is it. He almost got fired after 1 year. This is it. Is the Titans brass really going to bring a rookie quarterback in that situation, knowing they're probably going to hire a new head coach next year? A new system? That's not a great spot for a rookie quarterback. I cannot see them taking a quarterback. But at the end of the day, who knows? But answering the question for me is, you don't force the quarterback. You just don't. Yes. We talked about you can't just force the quarterback if you don't have a top 20 grit. And this is kind of like the Carson Wentz situation. This is 2016 all over again. People were so pissed at the Browns that they traded out of that spot when they had a chance to take a quarterback because they needed a quarterback. Well, guess what? They made the right decision not taking Carson Wentz. So, do it again. And it's the same director of football operations in charge there, chief strategy officer, I'm sorry, is what his title is, and Paul DePodesta. Andrew Berry was on that staff in 2016. He wasn't the GM, but he was up there in the front office. I can't think that their mindset has shifted from 2016. So, take whoever's on the board between Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter. If you want to throw Mason Graham in there, that's great. Hell, if you want to throw, I think they want out of the pick. I think the Titans went out of the pick. I think that's what they're trying to say here. I think the Browns went out of the pick. But much like 2022, where again, we were trying to force Malik Willis into a top five pick. Teams aren't just going to come up for quarterbacks because they need a quarterback. Teams aren't just going to draft quarterbacks because they need a quarterback.
I think that's the reason why we saw six go in the first round last year.
Because they anticipated this class. Yeah. Yeah. And I do think, and that's not to say, I do think the Falcons had conviction about Michael Penix. I do think the Broncos and Sean Payton had conviction about Bo Nix. If the Browns don't have, and if the Titans don't have conviction about these quarterbacks, they're not going to take them. They're not going to take them. Straight up. So what do the Browns do at two? If they're sold on the quarterback, they'll take the quarterback. If they're not, they won't. That's what it comes down to. You can't take a player you're not sold on. And why would you be sold on either of these guys in the top two?
Yeah. Yeah, you just take the outrageous talent that doesn't get selected at number one.
Or you trade back. Yeah.
Or you trade back if you can get a trading partner.
I kind of got a hot take a little bit, Bruin. I'm not ready to drop it yet. I'm not ready. Maybe I am. Okay, I'm going to caveat this by saying I think Cam Ward is the much better quarterback of the two between him and Jalen Milroe. But from a value standpoint, I'd rather take Jalen Milroe at 33 than Cam Ward at two.
Oh, the would you rather here or here? We're doing Jalen those questions.
32 than Cam Ward at 2.
We're doing those questions all offseason.
You're not playing Milrow or Ward, hopefully, as a rookie, either situation. We're in year 5 with Cam Ward, and he's making the same decisions he's made in year one.
I'm getting Milrow on the field immediately, just not as my everyday every down quarterback.
That's fair.
He's touching the ball. He's touching the ball.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But like Nick Saban likes Jalen Milrow. Like all of these, again, Tommy Rees is in the building, right? Tommy Rees was the offensive coordinator last year, 2 years ago. Like the Browns have a good idea of who Jalen Milrow is and who they think of Jalen Milrow based off of that alone. So like, but like, if I have to choose the two and sit one for a year and hope they develop, it's Jalen Milrow, man. Like 10 times out of 10.
Because then you get the generational talent at 2, or
maybe not 10 times the high-end talent. That's probably
where the high-end talent. But then you also have the opportunity to develop a guy with no. It's exactly like the Will Levis situation. If it doesn't work out, it was a second-round pick on a quarterback. Correct. It was a home run swing.
That's the DeShone Kizer thing the Browns did in 2017. Yeah. Yeah. They went and drafted Baker the next year. It's a second-round pick. The guaranteed money's nothing after the first round. It's pennies.
Yep.
And again, we've talked about it with Milrow. Scouts have running back grades. Even if you take him at 33, you're not going to miss because you throw a pair of gloves on him and you teach a dude who's 6'1 and 220 how to pass protect.
Yeah. Yep.
He runs a freaking 4.3. It's my podcast. But I still would like to keep it a little.
Yeah. You caught yourself. You did catch yourself. Next question, I think we can move on to here. And we should do those this or that, like this round. Those are such fantastic thought experiments. It's a great draft if you need help at blank position. This is from Jeff Kapashi, I believe is how you would pronounce that, on X.
I love this question because we've been pretty vocal about two positions.
And tight end and running back.
Running back and tight end, baby. I also think interior offensive line. You could find some really good interior offensive linemen in this class as well. And I'm getting around to the offensive tackles as well in this class.
And I would say edge as well.
Edge I'm kind of cooling on, man.
I think edge is really deep. I think you can find a guy that you want.
Yeah.
All the way into round 4, maybe even 5.
So here's my issue with edge is like we are generally lower – on all these edge guys than we were over the summer. Like James Pierce, we were talking about him as a top prospect. Now we talk about as a top 15 prospect, which is still really good, but even as a top 15 prospect, we have questions. Mykael Williams, again, some people had him as the top overall player in the class. You and I have never been there. I watched Mike Green some more today, man, and like I don't get the top 32 hype. I think Mike Green's a really good top 100 DPR type player. I can't get their top 100. It's like Shamar Stewart. I love Shamar Stewart.
And
everybody loves Shamar Stewart. Like
But that's what I'm trying to say here is like you go 15, 20 deep with the edge guys.
You can.
And that's the thing. Like you can find rotational guys. And like you're looking at like Jared Ivey being pick 150 in this class. And I think that he can give you good snaps on the edge.
Interior like, or edge. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's where we're at with this class. Like somebody who I really trust is John Owning, and I'm going to try to get him on the podcast to talk about edge, specifically about Mike Green, because he is carrying the torch for Mike Green as a pass rusher, and I really trust his eyes when it comes to pass rushers. But I'm there with you, and that's what I think makes this class so unique,
yeah,
is there are all of these different archetype guys. There's all these different body types and play styles, specifically on the edge, that teams are going to look at and be like, that is the exact type of player that we need opposite of the guy that we have right now or in our rotation. And I think that's why I like this edge class so much, because I think if you need something, it's there. And I think that the value will be there because there are so many guys. So that's the way I feel about that. Tight end, I there might be 6 or 7 starters from this class, dude. Yeah. It's so good.
And again, I have been cooling on positional value as a thing that actually matters. I think like, I don't care if you think you have a good football player that can fit into your system and contribute and be a star, like take him early. And I think the Lions have shown that with Jack Campbell and with Jahmyr Gibbs, with what they're doing. But like, man, my last thing on Mike Green.
Brian Branch. They took Brian Branch. They took a nickel at 34 or whatever it was, 35.
Brian Branch is a fantastic example of a player, the easiest eval, a top 10 player in that class. Like, unbelievable eval. Because he ran a freaking 4.5. Okay.
Xavier Watts.
So, dude, I mean, I think Mike Green's Ohio State tape has to hold a lot of weight because it's the only big game that he played, the big team that he played. And, like, Will Kaczmarek, Ohio State's blocking tight end, like, was one-on-one-ing him. Most like a lot in that game, and I can't get that out of my head, man. I can't. I think he's got some pop in his hands, but like that's it. Like he can add shock value, but then I don't see speed to power. Like I don't see the second to that. Like I don't know. We could probably talk a lot more about Mike Green on a podcast individually, but yes, tight end, running back, and what I love about those classes is because those are two positions that. Speaking of positional value, you could get some really awesome value day two. Like how it's very rare. You might have one tight end a year that goes first round. You might have one running back, two running backs a year that go first round. Some team's going to draft Omarion Hampton top 50 and get an awesome player. Like I think the Chicago Bears could take Josh Simmons in the first round at 10, come back in the second round, hit Omarion Hampton, and you could have a David Montgomery type player for Ben Johnson. Wait, which is really funny because Chicago had David Montgomery too. Like that type of player, what he does for Detroit is invaluable to them. And you could get him at pick 40, wherever they're picking, 42, I think, in the second round. Yeah. So, like, Trevion Henderson, like, again, the hairline thing has to check out, but like a zone specific team is going to draft him round three and get a crucial role player who's going to come in on third downs and absolutely kick ass, both as a receiver and as a pass protector. And he's got great vision and explosiveness back. So, like, that's where I love this class. And tight ends the same way. Gunnar Helm, he's not going to test off the charts. You draft that guy, what, top 75, you're going to get a starter.
There might not be another guy in this class who I think is a safer prospect. And that just doesn't really ever exist at tight end. But I think Gunnar Helm is just going to be a solid pro at the very least.
That was Ladd McConkey for me last year. I was like, outside of injuries, there's no way you're missing on that guy. Awesome. That's Gunnar Helm for me this year. Like, there's no shot you're missing on him. Harold Fannin, I think, kind of has a lower ceiling than people give credit for, but like there's a ton to work with there. Mason Taylor, you flex that dude out. He's a fluid athlete. Like I could go on and name a bunch of tight ends in this class and say, yeah, you could get a massive bang for your buck out of those two positions at tight end and running back.
Yep.
And again, with every offensive tackle we've talked about being kind of a guard, you could find some really good guards in this class too.
Yeah. And that brings us to our last question. These two are kind of related because we're going to bring up multiple guys from those positions that we just talked about. Brian Moffey asks, who are a couple of sleepers that aren't getting enough immediate attention? And I think this is a really good place to talk about a running back, a tight end, and for me, a corner. And I believe you are talking about an offensive tackle, a running back, and a wide receiver.
A linebacker.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Let's start, and I'm going to start with the tight end because he's somebody whose name I heard over the summer, played in two games last year, two plus a little bit, hurt his ankle, missed the rest of the year. Comes from a tight end factory. He had a big sophomore season or a pretty decent sophomore season and then just did not get the ball at all this year. But that is Iowa tight end Luke Lackey. 6'6". He reminds me of, there was like a 5 or 6 year stretch where it was like Dalton Schultz and like seven tight ends for that Stanford team that were all like 6'6" or above. They were all just massive tree trunk dudes who just ran up the seam and put their hands up and caught passes. And I think when I watched Luke Lackey, that's what I was expecting. 6'6", 253. He looks lean, but it's no surprise his father was an offensive tackle. And I do think that Lackey lacks a little bit of core strength. I think that he needs to get a little bit stronger there specifically as a blocker, but his hands are really good as a blocker. He fights a lot like Mason Taylor. He fights his ass off when it comes to trying to get into good positional leverage. Iowa obviously runs a ton of wide zone. When he's backside on wide zone, he's working his ass off to cut off five techs and four eye guys. And so for me, he's somebody who I really like. But what I really like about him is at 6'6", 253, he is incredibly fluid in and out of breaks. He is a very good route runner overall. I do think that his hands need to get a lot better when it comes to when he's working along the stem. He can get crowded really easily. So his hands got to get better. I think he's got to get more physical as a route runner as well and use his frame. Mm-hmm. But good hands, solid guy who really is able to catch the ball consistently. He, like I said, has good hands as a blocker. He needs to get a little bit more core strength. But I think he's a good enough athlete to where this is the guy that you draft on day three who you saw it with him when he was younger. Injuries took away a year. A bad offense, a bad passing attack at Iowa this year. Uninspiring usage overall. But when he has a free run, when he isn't crowded at the line of scrimmage, he's somebody who can, you know, on secondary releases, make safeties look stupid with some eye manipulation and the ability to get in and out of breaks. So somebody who I'm excited for the potential. And this is something that we look at with tight ends. How good of an athlete are you? Because a lot of colleges just don't feature the tight end position in the passing game. So that's something. And another thing is not very many true passing sets where he is pass protecting. So another thing that you just would like to know a little bit more about.
Yeah. Did you know his dad is also the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah. Actually, this is a really cool story. It's way off topic, but
I knew he was from Columbus. I knew his dad played at Ohio State.
Yeah, but he has a very long record streak of calling a bunch of games in a row, and he was about to break that streak for Iowa Senior Day to be at Iowa for Luke Lackey's Senior Day. Ryan Day flew him out and his in the team jet, so he could go to Senior Day and still make it back in time to call a game to not break that streak. So that's a pretty cool story there too. But yeah. His dad is the voice of Ohio State. For my first one, I'm going to go with a sixth-year converted quarterback linebacker. This is the Deion Henley track, right? And Deion Henley's a hell of a linebacker for the Chargers now, by the way. And I'm going to go with South Carolina's Demetrius Knight, who was a quarterback at Georgia Tech. Transferred out of Georgia Tech after he got no playing time. Went to Charlotte. Blew up at Charlotte. And then transferred into the SEC to South Carolina, and I think he's a really instinctual linebacker because
is that number 17 or yes. Zero? Okay, 17. Gotcha.
Yes, and I think he has such good instincts, similar to Dan, only because he played quarterback. I think his eyes just know what to look for. Solid frame at 6'2", 245. Again, he is a sixth year, so he's a little bit on the older side, but I believe Deion Henley was a sixth year too, coming out of Washington State. The season racked up 82 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 forced fumbles, 1 interception, 1 pass defend. He had 3 interceptions last year. I have a scout buddy who was on the staff at Georgia Tech and kept telling him, why is this guy not on the field? Why is this guy not on the field? And then they said he can't play. So he transferred out, and now he's talked about. And I know some scouts who absolutely love Demetrius Knight out of South Carolina. Again, 6'2", 245, awesome build, really athletic. And just not a player that's talked about. And I think down the stretch here, he's going to blow up. The Senior Bowl is this week. This is where players start, older players start to blow up. Yeah. He's going to the Senior Bowl. He's going to get to the Combine. He's going to do some nutty stuff at the Combine. And then people are going to be like, oh, wait, yeah, this guy's awesome. So Demetrius Knight's that guy for me.
Yeah, that was my first thought when I watched him, was super explosive. Because I watched him, I watched the number 0, and I can't remember his name, but I watched both of those South Carolina linebackers as I was trying to keep my eyes away from my true love, Nicky Memori. Anyways, he still is under the radar, but I'm not going to talk about him. I'm going to talk about Virginia Tech running back Bashal Tutten. This dude is an absolute monster. I loved watching him. Quick-footed laterally, ability to really get some good width on his jump cuts, fluid feet, solid downhill explosiveness, good second level burst to really test pursuit angles. I think he's going to run in the low 4.5s, maybe high 4.4s. Really like his leg drive, kind of more of a compact build, 5'9", 210. really nice ankle flexion, smooth hips, swivels. He gets outside quickly, strong lower body. He's willing as a pass protector. He's not a great pass protector, but he is willing to put his body on the line there. His only real issue is that he has horrific, horrific ball security.
It's like once every 50 carries or something like that, right?
It's worse. It's like once every 40 some touches, which Jonathan Taylor was historically bad as well. He was like one for every 65 touches. So we're talking about somebody who is truly horrific at keeping hold of the ball. But that is something that I have really, because of Jonathan Taylor, started to ignore. So it's a part of my grading scale. It's weighted very little, very low, because I think that it is a very coachable issue for 99% of guys. So little, you know, chopped off, explosive back, really like the player.
Nice. I love it. I am going to do a running back as well. I'm going to take a running back here as well. And I'm going to go with Kansas State's DJ Giddens. DJ Giddens is big, dude. He's like six. He's a big dude. I want to say he's like 6'2", 215.
Yes.
But he's a fluid runner. He's a fluid 6'1", 6'1", 215. He's an extremely fluid runner, and I really like his eyes. I really like his eyes working along the interior. Similar to Caleb Johnson, I think there's some long speed limitations with him. He's probably a 4.5 athlete. But at the end of the day, like a 4.5 athlete with good eyes is a 4.5 athlete on the field. A 4.3 athlete with bad eyes is a 4.6 athlete on the field. So like I'll take awesome eyes. I think he's a two down back. He's got an awesome frame, but he's not a great pass protector. Right.
No. So,
he's got some work to do there to be coached up and as a pass protector. I do think he has some soft hands though. He's not one of those guys that's going to demand manufactured touches out of the backfield. But I think again, similar to Caleb Johnson's, when he is targeted, he's got soft hands and shows the ability to catch the football and make a play. But again, the long speed's not there. I think this season he caught a pass out of the backfield and had nothing but green grass and got tracked down from behind. But a guy with awesome eyes will play at the NFL level no matter what. Who is patient with great eyes will play no matter what. So I think DJ Giddens is a back in this class who's I'm probably going to have as like a top seven back in the class that isn't getting that kind of hype elsewhere. But I think he's just going to come in and he's going to play at the NFL level. So DJ Giddens is my second sleeper.
Yeah, and I'm just sitting here looking at the list of backs, and there's legitimately like 28, 29 names here that I'm just looking at. Like, yes, I would draft him. Yes, I would draft him. Yeah, I would draft him. Just all the way down the list. It's insane. Anyways, my last guy. I've talked about him a lot. And this is another, funny enough, Virginia Tech player, a team that doesn't really get talked about at all. But it's cornerback Dorian Strong. Dorian Strong, sorry. 6 foot, 182, fifth year senior. Love his zone eyes, man. I love the way that he is able to be in cover three leverage outside over the top and be able to click and close on in breaking routes and be able to get through the hands without committing penalties. I think that that's something he's really good at. I think that he is a good enough athlete to turn and burn with guys. I think that he has some really, really strong playmaking zone eyes. There was a play against Miami where he caused an interception. He came off of a post to drop down on a pass from Cam Ward and just goaded the throw. Tipped up, ended up being intercepted. I think that because of the really heavy cover three looks, you get a little bit of what you see from guys that play at Notre Dame as well, where they carry the front shoulder quite a bit. When it comes to carrying vertically, when they're carrying the front shoulder, they're going to be susceptible to back shoulder fades. It's just something that's going to happen when you're trying to maintain over the top and cap that. So I think that there needs to be a little bit of coaching up when it comes to that and his ability to trust his athleticism and survive vertically playing on that back hip. But I do think at the end of the day, he is a good enough athlete. And what we talk about all the time with corners is it is as important to go to the correct schematic fit as it is your own pure talent. Because if Nate Harrison goes to a place where he has to think a lot, it's going to go poorly. And if you go and put Dorian Strong in Minnesota, where he's going to be on an island, mm-hmm. it probably won't go very well. But get him in a more quarters, cover three, zone heavy scheme, and let his eyes work, and I think he could be a really good pro.
Love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. This corner class is good too. That's another one we could have talked about. But my last one, I'm going to go with a big boy. I'm going to go with an offensive tackle that isn't getting enough media love until 2 weeks from now when the Senior Bowl happens. Yeah. It's going to happen because he's a freak athlete at 6'8", 305. And that's UConn's, I think he's a six-year senior too. So a lot of these older guys aren't getting the buzz, but UConn's Chase Lund. Again, awesome, awesome movement skills. I think some team could fall for him the same way they fell for Spencer Brown out of Northern Iowa.
And he's a fifth year, by the way.
Fifth year senior. The way that Spencer Brown out of Northern Iowa, teams fell for him, and he is one of the best right tackles in football right now. Wide zone teams are going to love Chase Lund. His ability to get to the boundary, to climb, is just so smooth. And what I love most about him is I typically hate offensive tackles that are like 6'8", 6'7", 6'8", because they typically don't have the knee bend to win the leverage battle. Like, they just give up their chest very easy because they're just giants. But what I love about Lund is because he's so fluid and a second athlete, he does have pretty extraordinary knee bend at that size too. And with that length to win with leverage still, even at 6'8". So I think he's set for an ascension. I think he goes day two. I think he can rise all the way in the top 50. I really do. Especially teams, wide zone teams that want to draft an offensive tackle that isn't questionably a guard. Like, I think Chase Lund has a chance to really explode.
And that's it. I think that's all we got. 32 minutes. Q&A, three questions. I gotta, it's for everybody listening. It is 9 p.m. I will be up at 4 a.m. So I am going to sleep immediately after this.
Off to bed. I love it. I love it. I got to wake up at 5 a.m. on Friday to fly out for Frisco. So right there with you here in a day or so. But Dalton, you have a great night. That's it for this episode of the Draft on Draft podcast. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll do 21 through 25 on our big
board. 21 through 25.
Tap back in. As always, I'm Corey. That's Dalton. See ya.